So here's our official welcome. Good morning, everyone, and we're so happy that you could be with us today. My name is Lorna Costantini, and I'm really pleased to co-host our show today with Kim Case and Peggy George. Oh, Peggy hit me for that one. Our special guest today is Donalyn Miller, and we're going to be talking about the book Whisperer. Before we get on to instruction about, can I have people check on the green check mark if you are new and have never used Illuminate before? I guess that's two categories. Okay, good. Thank you for letting me know that. So I am going to take a 2 minutes here to walk around how to participate, although some of you may have already figured that out. We do have open mic time near the end of the show, so bottom left-hand corner is the mic. You need to click it on. It becomes yellow. Click it off when it's not. And if you're going to use the mic, please run that audio setup wizard, which is under Tools. Audio setup wizard up here to make sure that your microphone's working. If it's not, we get feedback. I think many of you have already figured out how to send message here. Down the bottom of the message window, type in here and click send, but just make it sure it's going to this room if you want everyone to see your comments. If it goes to a specific person, just recognize that the moderators do see all comments for the show. There's some fun things you can do here. We're going to ask some poll questions. We've already figured out the green check and the red X for polling. Some emoticons here, smiling, clapping if you want to share some experiences here. Len's clapping for us. Thank you very much. Indicating that you want to come to the mic, use the hands up with the green arrow. So you'll put a number in front of your name, and we'll let you come to the mic. Or if it's not appropriate, Kim will field your question during the show, or as Donalyn is able to answer them. But Kim does collect the questions, so if it doesn't get answered right away, we will try to include your question later on in the show. We will be having some whiteboard fun in a few minutes, so there's a couple of things I want to point out to you. We're doing the World Map. This little tool here, we're going to use the blue wand with the starburst on. So when you click that, you get a little star. You locate yourself on the map. And we're going to ask you to put some content on our whiteboard here. And you're going to go over here on the whiteboard tools and select just the letter A. Click on that. It'll help you work. So some people are already getting going on the whiteboard. That's a quick overview of the interface. I just want to point out to you, you may be seeing some notifications either by a sound ding, or you see a little pop-up window with someone's name showing you when they're in or out the session. If that's not working for you, then go to your menu bar under Tools and Preferences, and you'll see there are two things. One is the visual notification, so if you scroll down in the menu, you'll see visual notifications, and select the options that you want by clicking Apply and close at the end of it. If you want to do the audio notifications, the same process, scroll down, find audio notifications, and then select the options that you want and apply. So that's a good way to work through your experience using the Illuminate Room, and I think you're all going to find it works quite well for us. On most days, we have everything going quite well. Key here to everybody is the recordings that we host on our website at live.classroom20.com. So that means if that chat room is going too fast for you, we do keep a copy of it posted on our website. We keep the audio, the Illuminate recording, so you can see all the interaction going on. We have an MP4 file that is also posted on our website, so you can watch the slide presentation. And we do have an iTunes U channel, which we'll talk about later in the show. But there's a terrific way to keep track of everything that's going on today. And then if you have to leave, or you know someone you wanted to share the day with, please send them back to our website for the archives and resources page so they can enjoy the same kind of knowledge and learning that we're enjoying today. So let's start the world map. We all have whiteboard tools. You're going to go here on the left-hand side of the whiteboard, select that laser pointer with the red star, and come over here and drop it on the map. So, and if you're not making that work, doesn't help us, type where you are in the chat room. Quite a few people here from the States, someone from Great Britain. Often we have people in Thailand and Italy, and maybe Virginia. She'll pop it a little later. Lots of people in Phoenix, Newton, Massachusetts, Camden, North Carolina, Los Angeles. Isn't it great to see the interaction and the wide knowledge base, because as the day goes through, please feel free to type any comments that you want to support the presentation. If you have links that you want to share, we're really looking forward to your advice and your information, because that's what this show is all about, sharing across the world. So that's our world map. I'm going to have some polling question here, putting you to work. So now we're going to use the green check or the red X. And the first question is, do you use free choice reading or SSR, sustained silent reading, with your students during the class time? So it's a green check if you are and a red X if you're not. Just waiting for everyone to fill in their options. Green check if you are, red X if you're not. It's at the bottom of the participants window. Remember that you'll see it. Okay, let me show the results. And everyone's had a chance to vote. So if you're not in the classroom, you're not teaching, I think the red X works. So here's the poll results. And we are fortunate that we should have some sharing from about 62%, 40 of our participants today are using this particular method. So we'll be looking for you to support Donalyn in her presentation. Let's go to our poll question two. Have you read the book, The Book Whisperer, by Donalyn Miller? So a green check if you have and a red X if you have not. Yes, Kim's right, it's on my to-do list. How about halfway? Well, so that question is, are you reading or have read the book? So whatever works for you. So that's the green checks and the red X's. Sure, it's silly, Donna, but go right ahead and do it. Then we can count you in the poll questions. Okay, I think most people have gone ahead and cast their vote. Let's take a look at the results. Good. We have, again, a large number of people are familiar with the Book Whisperer book, and 24 of us who are not familiar or have not read the book will really enjoy today's session with the sharing that Donalyn's going to bring forth to us in a minute. Okay, here's where we're going to have you fun. This is the poll question. In a minute, I'm going to ask you to write on the whiteboard the answer to the question. This is about how you get funding for your books that you provide for your students in the classroom. So please give us an idea. Do you fund them? Does the school board fund them? Where are you getting the money to fund the books that you provide in your classroom? So everyone has whiteboard tools, and here's the whiteboard to start writing. You're in a private school, the kids are buying the books, Scholastic Points, your checkbook, personal funds, students, library budget. Looks like a lot of people are buying and supporting their reading programs with their checkbooks that run the garage sales, parents, government grants and book fairs. I think that's a really strong indication of the commitment of the teachers that are supporting their classrooms when they're putting their dollars in behind their learning materials. So as Peggy says, no surprises here. We pretty sure thought that's what the case was, but it's nice to see it validated on the whiteboard. So great. I think you all had fun typing away in the whiteboard, so that's a good start to the show. You've got your minds engaged, and let's go on to introducing our special guest today. Again, the topic today is The Book Whisperer, and our special guest is Donalyn Miller. Donalyn Miller is a sixth grade language arts teacher at Trinity Meadows Intermediate School in Keller, Texas. And in her quest to spread reading freedom, Donalyn teaches staff development presentations at campuses and conference rooms across the country. Her articles and essays appear in national publications like Library Spark magazine. And she shares her ideas and strategies for teaching reading and inspiring students on her blogs and for teacher magazine, The Book Whisperer. She describes herself, and hope she doesn't mind if I share this. She lives atop a dragon's hoard of unread books that she calls the Miller Mountains with her husband, two daughters, and baby granddaughter. And in her spare time, she travels, visits old friends, and daydreams all about all the inside pages of her treasure book. So, I know that, Donald, if you want to share more of your background information, and when I give you the mic in a minute, please feel free to do that. But I do have a special question for you that I think will... get the whiteboard. Start the thinking process. I'm sorry, brain's not working, but here's the question or suggestion. Donna, can you tell us your story about how you came to implement your current reading strategies that you write about in your book? So that's an opening question, and I'm going to turn the mic over to you to start our presentation again on behalf of all of us here. Thanks very much to being with us today.
Thank you for inviting me, and I think I started in the place where most teachers start, in that I thought I had a good idea about how to teach reading when I became a new teacher. You know, everyone was creating whole class novel units that led children through shared books, and I spent a lot of time designing those units with my students, for my students, and with a lot of intent about what I was doing. But it came to me during that first year of teaching that my students were not as engaged with the books that I was using for those units as they were with their own books. And I remember one student asking me, a good student, an engaged student, asking me, "I'm done with my activities for Chapter 9. Can I read my own book now?" And I realized there was a disconnect there. I thought I was leading my kids to books, but what I was really doing was perhaps superimposing my goals over their own reading goals. And so joining some book study groups and trying to expand my own knowledge of what I would be doing in the classroom with my students, I started looking more at free choice reading programs and looking at what research shows us actually engages kids with reading. And some of those things would be carving out time in the classroom for students to read. I know that we often think that children are reading at home, or we hope that they are, but indicators show that they're not. And I think if we value reading, then we have to make time for it, just like we do anything else we value. I have a 90-minute reading block at my school in sixth grade, so I set aside almost 30 minutes a day for independent reading, and during that time, I'm conferring with students and having them read out loud to me, helping them select books, discussing their books with them. My suggestion in general is to look at how much time you have devoted to your literacy block and set aside about a third of it for independent reading. So if you only teach a 45-minute class, then I would say 15 minutes. I see Donna's question come up on the chat, and I teach sixth grade. Some of the other things that I've realized were that students are motivated by adults that are readers, and we know this, I think, in a common sense way, but thinking about how we could unpack that in a classroom and live our literate lives in front of our students as a role model was something that I don't think occurred to me in that early year of teaching. So I found that my students are passionate and excited about reading because I am. And nothing sparks interest in a book more than for me to walk into my classroom with a book, hand it to a student, and say, "I just finished this book, and I think that you would like it too." And so I know that my friends on Twitter that I talk with on a daily basis about books, they're passionate about literacy. If I were to point to one thing that I think inspires and motivates kids to read, I think it's strong reading role models who are knowledgeable about the types of books that children like to read. If we're not reading role models, then who are? I see Techno Queen's question. Yes, eventually I think the goal is that we do want to have students build that community with each other as readers. I think it starts with the teacher, but it doesn't end there. And we do want our students to become those reading partners for each other, because they're only with us for a short time, but they're with their peers in school for many years. I see Terry's been trying to read my lips all this time. Thank you, Terry. And Bill is talking about building that community. And building that community of readers is what we are talking about. It's not about the teacher having their goals, even though, of course, I do work to meet the standards that I have for the state of Texas for teaching. But it's also about building that community so that children have some success and experience with why reading is enjoyable. Because that ultimately is what makes kids readers over the long term, is recognizing that reading has some meaning for them outside of the classroom. Reading isn't just a school job. It's a life activity that people engage in willingly. Yes, I think that's good. So recognizing that we're about promoting free choice reading in our classroom, it can become a little bit difficult to organize reading response activities in the classroom where everyone is reading their own books. We certainly want children to be able to show us what they know about books, and also that underlying goal of continuing to promote reading in the way that readers, what I say, readers in the wild, do. I'm not a big fan of the phrase real readers, because I think that that implies that our students are not real readers, and I have 97 students that would disagree with that. But so when we look at what readers in the wild are doing, and that means readers who read because they want to and not because anyone is making them, there are some meaningful tools and methods for responding to the books that we read. So my plan is to share a few of those. But looking at projects in general, and I like the word long-term assignment as opposed to project, because I think parents panic when they hear the word project. So we have kind of moved towards that long-term project term on my team. But when we look at technology tools, how does integrating technology benefit students anyway? Well, we know that technology is motivating for students. Lucy Calkins has a great quote that I use often: students should not have to wait for the school day to end for their lives to begin. And I know that we realize that our students are using a great deal of technology in their daily lives. So bringing that technology into the classroom does validate them in what their interests are. And many students are adept in that use of technology. And so bringing that into the classroom also allows students to show us skills that they may have that we might not see otherwise. Using technology in the classroom also uses multiple modes of written and verbal communication. Students are filming video, they're writing book reviews, they are filming book trailers, and so we get an opportunity to have them use multiple ways of expression through the use of technology. I've also found that many of my students have picked up their technology knowledge on their own, and so they have gaps in what they know. For example, I realized my students knew how to copy and paste things. That's how they do research in sixth grade, by copying and pasting things, but they didn't know how to do some things like cutting and pasting to manipulate text. The need had never presented itself, and so they hadn't learned it. So using technology tools in the classroom, in the language arts classroom, gives us as teachers an opportunity to fill in some of those gaps with explicit instruction and show students how to use technology in different ways. Now, considering what a response project might look like, I generally use the same sequence to approach these sorts of projects with students. And the first thing would be investigating published models. So we go onto the internet and we look for examples of these types of expressions. How are readers talking about their books on the internet, and what are some of the published models and what they look like? This is a screenshot of Jen Robinson's book page, a great resource for teachers and parents about the latest books that are coming out. And Jen's a big member of the Kid Litosphere and on the Sybil's board, so a great knowledgeable source. So we might go to a blog like Jen's and just read book reviews and see what other things that she's talking about with books. And then the students and I would work together to develop some criteria. So looking at those published models, what does an exemplar book review look like? What does a great book trailer look like? And we make lists together of what we've noticed as far as what professionals or dedicated amateurs are doing in their classrooms, or doing on their websites, I'm sorry, to talk about their books. This is an example of a student's list for what a great book trailer would look like. And then we use the criteria of the published model to design our checklist for how our response projects would work. I saw someone's comment. Instead of telling them what makes it look great, leading them to their own understanding. I think that's important because it's a richer conversation than me just saying, here's the rubric for the book review. This is what you need to do. You know, the students are looking and think of all the reading and researching that they're doing in the meanwhile as far as going on, you know, a book list website and having them read lots of book reviews and determine that criteria for themselves. We'll make a chart in the classroom. I also put it on a Google Doc so that the students can access it and look at that criteria that we agreed on together. I have done something I shouldn't have done. Okay. See, this is what happens when you have amateurs running the show. We'll just look at it backwards. How about that? Okay, our next step would be to research the books and the authors that we want to use. And when I say researching books, that means reading the books. You know, part of what we are doing, of course, is lots of reading. So if we have decided to write book reviews of several books, then that necessitates reading them. This is a photo of Roland Smith, who's the author of Peak and several other high-interest books for middle school and upper elementary students. So we would research Roland Smith's website or read several of his books before we launched into a project about him. And then finally, the final step, well, the next to the final step would be creating the product themselves. These are some of my students who are working on their Goodreads pages and going online and creating their book reviews for their book reviews projects that we were working on. And then finally, publishing it. Finding a way to put that response out on the internet where we can have some authentic audiences. You know, looking at a lot of the ideas that I'm about to share with you as far as websites, and I realized that audience is really the key to what makes a project authentic. We could turn a book review into just another way of doing a book report. We could turn a podcast into just another way of doing a book report. And so audience, to me, is what breaks the line between what makes it authentic and what doesn't. Because no matter how much technology children are integrating into their projects, no matter how much engagement they have in producing it, if I am the only audience, or even if the classroom is the only audience, it's not as authentic as it could be to a reading audience. Our goal is to get them to get students engaged in what an authentic reading life looks like, and that means having an audience outside of the classroom. Yes, I saw someone ask if I have access to YouTube at my school. Our district has recently released access for teachers for just about everything. Now, that students still have limited access to quite a few things, but I can access them and show them, show different things to my students using my own free access now. That's a new thing that just came about this year, and I believe a lot of school districts are eventually going to be moving to something like that so that teachers can access the resources that they need to provide instruction to students. So after thinking about our response model that we have and how we would lead students towards those authentic response projects about their books and reading, let's spend some time looking at some resources we could use. And I've sequence these in a way that probably runs from easiest and quickest to use in the classroom to most complex. It would be the same order that I would teach them in a classroom. We would probably start with Wordle, the first site, the first few weeks of school. So the first website that I often use with my students is Wordle. I know that many of you are familiar with Wordle. There are some other websites like Wordle where you can create word clouds out of text that you import. What I like about Wordle is you can get a response very quickly. It doesn't take a lot of instruction for the kids to be able to use it. And I'm looking for a way that we can share a web Wordle. If you look at Wordle, you can type in a bunch of text. And then, after you input it, just create a word cloud out of it. Now, I found that Wordle is a great way to get response from students on things like theme, or we can see if you use app sharing. I'm not really sure how to do that. I'm sorry. We'll just wing it with the screenshot then. So when we are, you can see this is a Wordle. You could use Wordles for writing territories. We could make a Wordle. I've had students will read a short story together and then work to identify what the main idea is or what the theme of the story is. And students can work in groups to make a Wordle. And you can see that some words are larger on the Wordle than others. The more you input a word into Wordle, the larger it appears in the text. Now you can manipulate this by, for example, inputting the word books over and over and over again to make it larger. Or you could also use it to see what are the big themes or ideas students are thinking of when they are coming to this understanding about a piece of text and responding to it. I saw exactly. Try it with a politician's speech. What are they really focusing on in that speech? I had a colleague who read the book Speak by Laurie Hall Sanderson with her students, and there's a particular paragraph in that book where the narrator is calling the boy that attacked her it, and she calls him it over and over and over again. She won't even refer to his name. And by inputting that paragraph into Wordle and creating a word cloud out of it, that becomes so visible to students so that they see that word it is large. Yes, Debbie, you do have to be careful in opening up Wordle. I usually open it up and then just click right on the Create page so that you can lead students to making them instead of previewing the gallery, because of course, since that is a public site, you could possibly see anything. But that just is evidence that people in the wild are using it. Another response type project that we could do that would be a step up from the Wordle would be writing book reviews. And many, many people are writing book reviews and posting them on the web. I think that's one of the most fascinating things about the web now is that, you know, Joe Bob can go on there and write his book review of the great book that he read. You know, in Texas, we always talk about Joe Bob. So I hope there's not any Joe Bobs in the forum today. But this would be an example of a book review that I wrote on Goodreads. But students could also post book reviews to places like Amazon or other websites, whether they could post them on blogs, they could post them in Edmodo, and students read quite a few book reviews. If you're interested in doing a book review project and you want published models, a lot of published models are available on Amazon. I have students look at the professional book reviews that are often included with Amazon reviews. Also, Booklist Magazine has a free 30-day trial where you can read their professional reviews of books. And so you could use that free 30-day trial for the duration of your book review project if you were just doing it for a short period of time. Now, publishers and authors themselves have found book trailers as a vibrant way to promote their books. And you see authors giving tips on their own websites about how to do great book trailers to promote their own books. Scholastic now has quite a few book trailers. This is actually a screenshot of Scholastic's website. They have quite an archive of book trailers that they have collected. A book trailer is just like a movie trailer, only it's used to promote a book. And so, of course, the flip side of looking at book trailers and getting excited about the books that we see in a book trailer we might view, we could now make our own book trailers. My students and I, in the spring, we make book trailers using flip cameras, and students work in groups, select a book that they have read, and then work their way through writing a script, creating the storyboards, and shooting a book trailer that we then post to Blogster or Edmodo or on our class websites. Librarians could also use these as a resource for kids. If you have iPods in the library or in your technology lab, you could keep an archive of book trailers from students that are created at your school. And then as students are wandering through the library looking for a book, they could access the book trailers that you have on the iPods if you have that technology available to you. There's the American Film Institute has a great free curriculum called Lights, Camera, Education, and it will give you the entire lesson plans for how to create a movie with your students. And it's a great curriculum. The students have to practice pitch meetings, presenting their book trailer storyboards to the rest of the class, and receiving feedback. Yes, it's also in Discovery Education, and that's how I found it, Karen, so thank you for reminding us about that. You notice that all of these projects lead back to how are we promoting more reading, because that's always my goal. Whatever we're doing shouldn't be an end point. It should always be how are we creating a response project that entices other children in the classroom or even children the next year to continue reading those books and get excited about the books that they're reading. That's always my end goal. It's not just what they're reading today or what they read yesterday, but what are they reading next that we can excite them about. EduBlog is a website that may be known to a lot of you because it is a free blogging site for educators. They do have gatekeepers that prevent people that are not in education from accessing that site, and you can create a blog with your students. A blog is a great place to incorporate some of the things that we've already mentioned, like Wordles, book reviews, book trailers. It would be a great place for your students to be able to store those and then share them with the class. EduBlog is a little more limited than some of the other things that we're talking about because, of course, you have to be on EduBlog to be able to access the website and see it, but that gives us some surety as educators that we are protecting students as we go. I am trying to keep up with the chat window at the same time, but it seems like Peggy and Kim have a good hold on that, so I appreciate you posting those links as I'm talking, and I'm trying to keep an eye and make sure that I answer any questions we might have. Edmodo is a website that I just found out about this year because of my friends on Twitter, And so, of course, I didn't know anything about Edmodo, but in typical fashion, I just thought, well, I will just leap on Edmodo and see what we can do about this. And I think with technology that happens to us a lot, if we get to a point where we feel like, well, I need to know everything about it before I use it with my students, then I'll be honest with you, I might never be using some of these tools. My students will get on there with me and then help me figure out what we're doing with it. And that's what happened with Edmodo this year. The thing I like about Edmodo is you can post assignments to Edmodo, and students can actually download the assignments, upload them, and you can grade assignments and give students feedback on writing. We just wrote our NaNoWriMo novels, and students turned their NaNoWriMo novels in to me. You can imagine the task of having students, 94 students, attempt to write 5,000-word novels, and printing those off and hauling those home in our milk crates and attempting to read those is just daunting to me. So having students turn them in on Edmodo, we were able to do that assignment completely paperless. And then I can read them and students can access them. I use Edmodo for just posting polls for reading response questions. When we read Origami Yoda this year as a read aloud, the main question, the main theme of the book, is Origami Yoda real or isn't he? I put that on Edmodo as a poll question, and then students went in to provide their opinions on whether or not they thought Origami Yoda was real. I will tell you that my sixth graders overwhelmingly said, yes, he is real, if you've read that book. I recommend that book certainly. Peggy, that's one for you to order. Strange Case of Origami Yoda. We're currently using Edmodo for our poetry unit. Students are reading poetry and then posting responses to poetry, providing links to different poetry websites. It's a great way for a class to work together to share house resources about the books that they're reading and share responses back and forth. You can upload YouTube videos to it. You can upload book trailer videos and things to it as well. I do have parent request letters that I send out for things for my students, because I do think parents should be aware that their children are using these websites. And I also have a technology night early on in the year where the parents sit with computers and investigate some of these sites for themselves, so that they have some understanding of exactly what their children are doing. With my sixth graders, they would just go home and perhaps sign themselves up for something and their parents not even be aware. And so as a teacher, I know that we have a responsibility to make sure parents are informed about what their children are doing as far as tools online that we're using at school. One of my favorite sites that I probably use on a daily basis is Goodreads, and I know that some people are on, some of my friends are on Shelfari as well. Goodreads is a social networking site for readers. Yes, Joan, you do need to join Goodreads. We will all friend you immediately so we could look at your bookshelves. Goodreads, my friend calls it Facebook for nerds. It's a social networking site for readers where you can keep shelves and keep track of the books that you're reading, the books that you plan to read, the books that you are interested in reading in the future. This is a great way for me to keep track of books that I hear about on Twitter, but they may not be out yet, or I read it in a book review magazine and I'm just not going to buy it at that time. I can warehouse it on my to-read shelf and then keep track of books, because I often find out that a book that I think I'm hearing about for the first time, I've heard about 6 months ago and then forgot about it. The nice thing about Goodreads, using it with students, is that Goodreads, they can write book reviews. Students can follow authors. I have a colleague that uses Goodreads with her high school students, and she uses the discussion board feature on Goodreads to do lit circles with them. So each discussion thread might be for a different book, and then she can post questions to students to lead those discussions and then collect the responses. There's also an inbox feature, and you know, I have promoted in the past writing reading response letters back and forth to students, but when I switched from writing 50 response letters in a week to 90 or so response letters in a week, I realized that handwriting those in spirals was insane. And I had to find a way to do it in a manner that was better for my students. If not, I would rarely respond to them like I wanted. So the inbox feature in Goodreads is a great way to exchange those reading response letters back and forth with students, again, in a paperless way. Now, Goodreads, you do need a web email address, and there are some limitations on the ages of students. Generally, because with Goodreads sends you a daily email that gives you the updates from all of your friends. Jeff, that's a great idea to use VoiceThread with students. I do moderate the students on Goodreads. I make them set their shelves to private, which means only the members of the class that they invite are allowed to look at their shelves. I tell them they have to friend me, and I say, well, we don't have to be friends, but we have to be friends for Goodreads. And you may unfriend me on June 6th when school ends, but for now, we have to be friends on Goodreads. I really have not had as much trouble with students on these websites that I'm mentioning as you might think. My experience in general is that we are sometimes afraid to let children do things because of what we're afraid they might do, and what we're really doing in that case is preventing them from showing us what they are capable of doing in a learning sense. And that's an education curve, I think, for us all in our goal to protect students on the Internet and make sure that we are providing them with learning opportunities that involve technology. I have one student who had an inappropriate picture as his avatar on Goodreads. His family raised dachshunds, and so he had a t-shirt snapshot on his avatar that said, "Ask me about my wiener." And so that was a very interesting discussion. If you've ever talked to a middle schooler, you know that kind of discussion where you are pretending like you don't know what you are saying, and the child is pretending like they don't understand you, but you both know. And so he did remove that. But that, I would have to say, that was the only problem on any of these websites I have had in 4 or 5 years of trying to use them. If there are age limits, and I think Techno Queen posted a question about age limits, I think we have to follow the rules. And so if our students are too young for accessing the website, then we have to look for other ways to use some of these tools in general. I suppose the ultimate site that we could use for reading response projects, and I wait to use this until the spring because it really does incorporate almost every other tool that we have found, and that would be Glogster. And I started using Glogster when I was teaching social studies as well as language arts because it was a great way for students to do research reports for social studies that we were required to do. But Glogster creates a virtual poster online where students can incorporate video links. They can post their own writing. They can add screenshots, links to video. You can see this is a screenshot of one student's response project that she did last year for, yes, thank you, Use Edu Glogster. I think they've changed their, you can get 50 student accounts free online now through Glogster. They do have a premium service too that costs a little bit more and has extra features, but you could certainly use it for, I agree, Peggy, I think the educator version is great and certainly has as many tools as you would need to use with students. Yeah, you don't need the premium version, I agree. And yes, it is, all of these tools are free. Everything that I've shared today is completely free, which is another part of its appeal. You know, even if we find this, with budgets being the way they are, I think it is easier to convince administrators to use some of these tools if they know that we're not incurring any cost for them. And I also think it's easier for us to explain the difference between Glogster and EduBlog. EduBlog is a blog, and Glogster creates a virtual poster online that you can use as, so the format just looks different. And certainly everything you can incorporate on a blog is available. Yes, Frankie, I think Glogster is 50 web, I think you can get 50 student accounts for free still on the Edu site. With Glogster, you can post images, you can put videos, you can scan in, yes, Peggy's posting, scanning in artwork, you can put hyperlinks in for students to be able to use to access the author's website, to go to interviews, to access book reviews online. You can see this screenshot with Forest of Hands and Teeth where there's a Glogster. There's a link to the video book trailer that was produced by Carrie Ryan's team for this book. You could also use this as a great way for students to work on a project together because they could all add things to the Glogster if you would like. Thank you, Peggy, for adding that link for the Glogster examples. I want to make sure we have some time left for questions. So just to recap, what I generally look for when I'm choosing web tools to use for my students is I'm looking for authentic opportunities for reading response. A lot of districts are subscribing to services like blogs. Like we used Gaggle in our district for many years. But the frustration that I had with that was once the school year was over, the district went in, clicked the button, and cleared out everything the students had worked on for the entire year. So that message that we're sending that this is the way that readers in the wild really respond was lost when all of the work that they had used disappeared. Also, if your district changes the web tools it's using, you have some sustainability in what you've created in the classroom. I also look for sites that are free because I prefer to spend all my money on books and not subscriptions to websites. I look for things that are student accessible after the projects or the class ends, so students could continue to use their Goodreads accounts after you stopped using. They were no longer a student in your class. They could continue to work on their Glogster things if you wanted to allow them to do that. But I also look for things that have some built-in monitoring features. Are there ways to keep the sites, the students safe from the public that might just stumble across their accounts on the internet? Are there ways that you can monitor what students are posting to these websites? And Paula, yes, you know, I joke about that often with Twitter in that people think it's all about Ashton Kutcher talking about how cute his wife is and what they had for lunch. And what I've found is that Twitter is probably the best source of free professional development that I have ever found. And I have learned just about everything I have learned about using technology tools in the classroom, I have learned off Twitter from my friends on Twitter. So, and again, another great free resource. Yes, everyone chiming in about Twitter. Amen. Ashton, all I hear about is Justin B. Thanks, Lynn. I guess Ashton's no longer. See, I'm not even that hip. I use Twitter. I'm not even hip enough to know who's hip on Twitter. So. there are some links that we'll post for some, and you see my last final plug for Twitter. Find more technology resources and classroom examples on Twitter. It is all in who you follow, Peggy. I think we should all follow Professor Nana, Terry Lassane. She's a great resource. I still have a doll film. What's Twitter? Twitter is a microblogging service where you can send out short messages called tweets and provide links. And see, Tom said he was reminded about this session on Twitter. I imagine several of our participants today came to us from Twitter. I suppose now would be the time to open it up for questions if you'd like, or if Kim and Lorna and Peggy have other ideas. I'm not really sure how to go about doing that from here. Oh, yes, we need to follow Paul Hankins as well.
Awesome. I'll step in and go back to some of the questions that I pulled earlier this morning, and you talked about ways that you facilitate the community with students so that they have a venue to share, and you talked about Twitter and all of those things. What do you say, and Maureen asked this earlier, about teachers who question, should they insist on doing the classics with their students?
Well, there's a great video online from Penny Kittle, and maybe someone can pull that link if they can find it, but she actually interviewed her seniors in high school. Now, these were students who were on the track to graduate, and so these were students that had been successful in many language arts and English classrooms, and Penny flat out asked her students how many of the assigned books that they had been asked to read in school did they read. And the average was about 4 through the course of high school. So although, yes, I certainly believe in the value of teaching the classics, I think we also have to recognize that we are not, every child that we teach is not destined to become an English teacher, and that what we want for our students is for them to grow up to be parents that value literacy and reading. And, you know, I meet all my instructional goals. My students take all the same tests that students take everywhere, and they're successful on those things. But they are also, I also see as one of my goals in fostering in them a lifelong love of reading. And if we don't make reading enjoyable, that will not happen. There are many adults who, educated adults, who walk out of school and breathe a sigh of relief that they never have to read another book. And those people become parents of students that walk into our classrooms. Lots of research on independent reading that support it. Do we have another question? I'm not sure I answered that one, but I probably over-answered
it. No, that was perfect. Another question is, what is your feeling about the use of accelerated reader in the classroom? Do you feel it's overused? And I saw that you had a blog post that addressed this conversation, same conversation thread.
Well, the conversation about AR, we could have an entire Illuminate session just on that topic, and I'm sure we'd have some very engaged participants in that discussion. The thing about AR that works are the same things that work in all free choice reading programs: access to books, time to read them, promotion of popular literature, school-wide support for literacy, money spent on books. You do not need a program for accelerated reader to provide all of those things.
I totally agree.
And also the expense spent on accelerated reader is really unconscionable when you consider how many of us are buying our own books in the classroom. Take some of that AR money and give it to us, and we'll know what to do with it. That would be my, I suppose, flippant answer on a Saturday.
I agree. I'm sure Renaissance Learning wouldn't be pleased to hear that, but that's a fact. That's a reality, and it's an exorbitant amount of cost per kid that could definitely, I think, be used in better or different ways. Joan asked earlier about her school wants book review projects to be standardized across the grades, and she asked, do you agree that this needs to be a standard?
The word standardization makes me nervous, because then I ask, where's room for the children in that? I recognize the need to have some common language and discussions when we are teaching things to students, and I could see the value in having a fifth grader come into my classroom who has already had some experience in writing those book review projects. But you can see that when I'm creating with my students the criteria, we're working on that together. That sends a and I saw some response to that. We're talking about a completely different feel to it when I create a rubric and pass it out and say this is what it should look like. So my question about that standardization would be, when are students putting in, being allowed to provide input on what their own work should look like?
I agree, and I think that input from the students is so important, obviously, and that's the basis of all that you do and the premise of what you believe and what you share. Technoqueen mentions about the age limits. Are age limits a stumbling block for you and some of the tools that you want to use with your students?
Well, Goodreads is now set up so that students must be, or participants, not just students, must be 13 years old or older. So I'm not using that this year with my students because they're 12. But most of the websites that I mentioned have educational applications, Wordle, Glogster, EduBlog, Edmodo, these are all set up with students in mind, and so there are not the age limitations that you might find on other sites.
And Sally asked earlier about when you were talking about the Wordles, I believe you or somebody mentioned that their first graders were using it for writing or responding with her question. And
I saw someone else mention that. It's not me with, oh, no, I would not teach first graders.
Yeah, so it must have been, yeah, to somebody else, obviously, that I pulled that out. And Tom just made a comment about the concern with programs like AR or reading counts is the motivation when they're done, like, for the summer or that school year. And do, like you talked about earlier, and, of course, like you mentioned, we could continue the debate, kind of like the Mac versus PC debate.
Well, the thing about AR, I'm sorry to interrupt.
No, please do. Ahead. Please do.
The thing about AR is that, again, what does reading in the wild look like? And being using those, I understand that short term, it's possible some children, and you can see how many qualifiers I put on that, might be motivated by AR over the short term. But when the school year ends, or they leave that school, or they graduate, what's motivating them at this point? I mean, what research tells us about motivation is that extrinsic rewards and motivation like AR or any other kind of extrinsic motivation just doesn't work. You know, students cannot go into a bookstore and, you know, locate books or in a public library and locate books for themselves when they have only read under a system like AR.
Agreed, and that's exactly what Tom's question was, is does the motivation continue to read on their own? Does it develop that intrinsic motivation to want to develop reading on their own? And most would guess to say that it doesn't promote that.
I saw a question scroll through about class size. And someone had asked a question about class size. Students, how do you do things when you have classes of over 32 students? I have three classes. All three of them have more than 30 students this year. I think that's common, again, with budget cuts. That's how most of us who are in the classroom are seeing that. I have one class that has 34 students, one class that has 33 students, one class that has 31 students. So, all of these things that I'm doing with my students, I'm doing with very large classes.
Yes, I agree, especially in Texas at sixth grade. You know, the cap in Texas ends at fourth grade. Fifth grade, they start with uncapped amounts. So, yeah, they're large class sizes.
Mm-hmm. I see Karen says she has 36 children. Mm-hmm. I jokingly said I fell down in my classroom yesterday, and I thought, you know, managing around 34 tasks is a challenge physically, it's a challenge mentally. You know, there's just a lot of children to try to reach all of them. But you know, it is what it is, and that's what we're working under. But these things are possible with large classes.
I totally agree. And when I read that on Twitter, I immediately thought when I was teaching sixth grade math, one room with like 34, 35 student desks, a table, and of course limited equipment, and the classroom that I was teaching in had a bullet embedded into the chalkboard that had been shot in from the street through the window. So it was just, you do what you got to do. And I can remember tripping over those backpacks and students many, many, many a time.
Just one more challenge of teaching.
Absolutely. And we're going to go ahead and formally close the show, but we do hope that everybody will be able to stay on and continue the conversation. We totally understand, though, if you have to leave, we want to be mindful of that, respectful of our time commitment. And we want to let you know that on December the 11th, our next session will be the featured teacher session for December, and our special guest will be Lee Colbert, and so we hope that you'll join us for that. We have some very special things planned coming up. The 18th, we're working on some details behind the scenes, and we'll let you know once all of that has been confirmed. And we do have a list of suggested websites called our Glam Link for the glamorous co-host of this session, and we'll be putting that Glam Link into the chat. And you can follow all of the resources that are shared in the chat log, and that will be posted on our website later this weekend at live.classroom20.com. And we'll be telling you more about that in a bit. We want to let you know that on December the 7th, on Tuesday, Steve will interview Kieran Egan at 5 p.m. Pacific and 8 p.m. Eastern as part of his futureofeducation.com series. And Steve will interview Julie Young on the Florida Virtual School, which was one of the precursors to the virtual schooling today. And he will interview Julie on Thursday, December the 9th at 5 p.m. Pacific and 8 p.m. Eastern. And as soon as you exit today, yes, all of this can be accessible. We have an archives and resources page, so all of the resources, the chat log, the total conversation, as well as the video, MP3 and MP4, will all be posted to our website. And you can give us information about today's session, as well as future topics, in the survey. As soon as you exit today's session, a survey will open in your browser. And we hope that you'll give us some great feedback. You can also request a professional development certificate today after the session by clicking, by inputting your name and email address, and Peggy takes care of that for us each week. So give us a few days to get that information back from Illuminate, and you'll receive the professional development certificate in the email. And if for some reason you can, like I said, if it doesn't open, you can email us at live@classroom20.com. Peggy's also helped coordinate an iTunes U channel for us, and you can access that at tinyurl.com/cr20live, iTunes U, all one word, and that will take you directly to iTunes and open up the iTunes U channel in iTunes so that you can subscribe and take us with you wherever you go. And we want to give a very special thanks to Donlin for joining us today, and to Steve Hargadon, who's the founder of Classroom20.com and Future of Education. And a very special thanks to all of you who participated in the show today and shared links and resources, as well as to Illuminate and Learn Central for providing this forum for us to meet each and every week. And yes, it's going to be exciting that Lee's going to be with us next week. And I'll post the link for all of our resources. And we'll go back to asking questions. And I just saw one that went by. And how many computers do you have access in your classroom, Donlin? We're not hearing you, so you might need to unmute your mic, Donlin. Okay, Lynn, thank you. That she has 24 computers. Great. And you share the cart. Okay, super. And if you have a question that you'd like to ask Donlin that I missed, or that you would like to ask a question, make a comment, or ask for clarification, please click on the hand with the green up arrow. We'll give you the mic. Yes, the link will open in your browser as soon as you exit the session. And Donlin, you're working on another book. Is that correct? Or are you working on another book?
Well, I'm just talking away and my mic is not on. That's funny.
We've all done that.
Working on a new book called Forever Readers with my friend Susie Kelly, and we have interviewed 900 adult readers about their reading habits and then identified some commonalities and trends and looked for ways that we can teach, explicitly model and teach those skills to children. I also saw Julie ask me what my pick was for the Newbery this year. And so I would have to say, I'm scared to say it out loud because then if I'm wrong, you will all remember. But I really believe one of my favorites for the Newbery this year would be Out of My Mind by Sharon Draper. That's the book that I'm really pushing for. I also think that another great book is Countdown by Deborah Wiles. And then finally, my third pick, see, I'll pick three, and then maybe I have a better chance of being right. My third choice would be The Dreamer by Pam Munoz Ryan, which is a fictionalized biography of the childhood of Pablo Neruda, and Peter Sis did the illustrations for that, and it's just an amazing book. So those three, Out of My Mind, Countdown, The Dreamer, I'm pulling. If any of those three won, I would be thrilled.
I'm definitely going to have to check those out because you definitely intrigued me.
Peggy's ordering those. Peggy's ordering those right now, aren't you, Peggy?
And Bill,
I see a hand raised.
Yes, Bill, did you have a question or a comment?
Hi, can you hear me?
Mr. Keepin.
Yeah. Well, hi from a very snowy England. We in England, in primary schools, obviously everyone teaches their own literacy, and I'm intrigued as to how you share this these approaches across staff who may be not aware of them, or maybe even in the light of some of the pressures with testing don't approve of them. How do you get that commonality of approach across your school or maybe across the district?
Well, I've been working in my district for about 9 years, and so that I've slowly been able to build up a level of rapport with my colleagues so that we can have some of these conversations. But we also look at, you know, I talk again and again, what does research tell us actually works for kids? And you know, Stephen Krashen has a great book, The Power of Reading, which I often refer to as a resource because he just lists study after study that shows that free voluntary reading actually helps children in many domains. And then also I think my own success with my students, just like any of us, living it in our own classrooms makes it real for people. I'm not just talking about it and saying, oh, this is what I think you should be doing. I'm doing it in my classroom with my students on a daily basis. Frankie would like me to charge. You know, I bet I could buy a lot more books, Frankie, if I started charging admission to my classroom. But no, if you want to come to Texas, you can come visit my classroom anytime.
Great, thank you. And Paula asked if your kids blog. I'm sorry, Bill, did you have a follow-up?
No, I'm done now, thanks.
Great, thank you.
Thank you, Bill.
And Paula asked if your students blog their recommendations.
Yes. We use EduBlog, and we also use Edmodo to blog our recommendations. Oh, Frankie's just up the road from me in Birdville ISD. She's in the next district over. I am in, my school is in Keller, Texas, which is in northeast Tarrant County, near the Dallas-Fort Worth area. I saw an X for Bill there. Bill, did that mean I didn't answer your question, and you have more that you'd like to ask? Or
I thought Bill said put the X because he was finished.
But okay, Bill, I just wanted to make sure he wasn't saying.
Okay.
You know,
great.
It's fine, Bill. I just
Thank
wanted
you.
To make sure I answered your question.
Let's see. I think I've asked all the questions. So if you would like to ask a question that we haven't addressed, and Pitt McQueen, let me give you the mic. Oh, yes, and talk about lit circles after Pitt McQueen asked her question.
Hi, I've had a discussion really great today. What I'm looking for is I'm in a middle school and media specialist. With the advent of teachers having classroom libraries, I'm having some resistance with some teachers getting them down to the library. Can you speak to the importance of coming to the library to select novels?
No. Not going to the library is not an option. I talk about that in the book Whisperer a bit, in that what I've actually found, and there is some research to support this too, is that classroom libraries actually increase children's desire to go to the library because reading is on their radar more now than in a way it might have been before. You know, when I talk to elementary teachers about going to the library, it seems like a no-brainer. And then as I talk to middle school teachers and then high school teachers, it seems like children are taken to the library less and less by their English teachers. My own daughter, who is in college now, told me that she only went to the library at her high school 4 times the entire 4 years that she went there with the teacher, and twice that was with her history teacher. So, no, I think we have to take children to the library because they have to learn how to be citizens of the library after school ends. And I do know that children value being able to go to the library and check out their own books. And also, my students work with our librarian to talk about the books that they think are exciting and then order those for the library so that more students have access to those books. So, you know, having a library in a school is vital. And the fact that so many librarians are being let go is just horrible.
There's a small school district in San Antonio that at the elementary level, they have gone to just a library clerk, a paraprofessional, and diverted the library funds to purchasing books instead of paying for the staff.
Well, I think there's still this mythology that librarians are about managing a collection and not about instruction, and that's just false. And so we need to show how libraries are the hub of learning in a school.
And Technoqueen, did you have another question or comment?
Yes, that. That's what I find is so important. I'm just finishing my master's. In 2 weeks I graduate, but I've secured my job now. And I think that it's so important because all these Web 2.0 tools that we can share with kids and create these networks for 21st learning with books is just fabulous. And just it makes me very sad that they think that all we do is manage a library and manage the collection. So I think getting that word out there and how we get that word out there that we are instruction, but we're also 21st learning supportive.
Well, and I also believe, you know, the idea that librarians, that everything a librarian does could be replaced by an untrained clerk and a good computer search is not true, but I have to wonder if teaching isn't next. This idea that, well, you know, everything kids need to learn could be found on the internet and we could just teach through the internet and there go the teachers as well. I mean, how far could that go? It could reasonably go very, very far.
Of all the years that I taught, my last, it wasn't until my 17th year when I was a campus instructional technologist that I experience a fantastic librarian and library. Mm-hmm. And it took all of those years because I'd never worked with a really awesome librarian until my 17th year. And she and I would do things together with parents as well as with students and with teachers. And it was a great complementary relationship. But you know, I can't believe all of the students that have never experienced that type of environment. And Technoqueen, did you want to continue your conversation?
I just want to say that I don't think that I think we have to do a better job in teaching our community and our stakeholders about what it is that we do. In order to keep our job security.
I agree with that.
Yeah, very important. Mm-hmm. Go ahead, Ms.
see that we have another question.
Yeah, technically, did you have another comment or question?
No, thank you very much.
Sure, thank you. If we have a question, if you have a question that hasn't been addressed yet, click on the hand with the green up arrow, or please continue to type them in the chat. And Donna, what are your views on e-books and e-readers?
Well, I think e-books and e-readers are great. I don't think the media that we use to share stories is really the issue. I think it's, you know, we're human beings. We'll always need our stories, whether we're telling them around campfires or whether I'm reading them off of my Kindle. I think when we're looking at a world where we still can't get access to paper books in many of our schools or in many of our homes, we're a long way from a nook in every backpack, but I can see the value in those tools in promoting reading to kids and also opening up access. I just don't think we're totally there yet. I also, you know, I think about my own reading, and yes, I do have a Kindle, but about 75% of the books that I read are passed into the hands of a child. And until I can do that in a way electronically that's cost-effective for me and accessible to my students, I'm not replacing those paper books in my classroom anytime soon.
I agree. And when I got my Kindle, my sister asked, am I going to miss the paper book? And at first I thought I might, but I haven't.
I like my Kindle for travel. It saves me, I travel quite a bit speaking mm-hmm. in places, and I like to be able, I don't have to pack 5 books in my bookcase anymore. And so in my suitcase, excuse me. And, but I love the feel of paper books, just like Karen was mentioning. And I think as long as there's a market for paper books, publishers will continue to make them. As long as people are willing to buy them. And so I think rumors of the death of the paper book are overrated. And I don't think all of those things, I don't think paper books will ever completely disappear, Peggy. I agree with you. I think what we'll have is both.
I agree. Can you talk a little bit about how you structure and utilize literature circles?
I don't use literature circles in my classroom. My students are completely free choice reading their own books. What I have found, though, last year my students read 5,240 books, but they really, among all those books, were only reading about 1,200 individual titles. And if we really if I really looked at their reading further, there were probably about 50 books that were read by multiple students, and I would say upwards of 30 students out of my 90 or so. And so the lit circles almost developed holistically in that way, or organically in that way. Students would find a great book and then pass it amongst themselves, and before I realized it, 25 children had read the same book in the classroom because they had passed it from reader to reader to reader. And so we were still able to have those conversations about common text that children had read, but they led themselves there instead of me designing it. My issue with lit circles really is that kids can hide in lit circles in the same way that they can hide in whole class novel units. Children that are struggling readers often will piggyback off of the other children in the group that have done the reading, and they, you know, we have to have times when children are held individually responsible for the reading.
I can see, yes, how important that accountability is in any structured setting. And John, are those role sheets having to do with the literature circle conversations or literature groups? Okay. Influence, yeah. And are there any questions that we might have missed that I didn't include? If so, please type them in the chat or click on the hand with the green up arrow and we'll give you the mic. And you can ask your question before we formally close the session and let Donalyn go for the weekend. And Donalyn, are you feeling better today? I know you hadn't been feeling well this week.
Well, I think I sound hoarse to myself, but you may not notice.
And what are you reading for you personally or professionally, Donna?
Oh, my goodness. What am I not reading? Okay. Well, you know, over the summer, for the past two summers, I've had this crazy book-a-day challenge where I've tried to read a book a day for every day of the summer break, and I've read a lot of great books. And so on Twitter, we started a discussion that we might want to do book a day over Christmas break or over the winter holiday break. I know it's not Christmas for everyone. And so so I'm kind of gearing up for that. But I usually have an adult book, a children's book, and a professional book going at any time. And then I don't get the characters confused then. I saw a comment that someone was saying. Right now I'm reading Barbara O'Connor's book. I can show it on the webcam. We'll just show the picture. Here we go. Barbara O'Connor's book, if I can get it from the webcam, The Fantastic Secret of Owen Jester, which is a fun book. I can already think of several of my students that would enjoy this. Lots of great humor in that book. On my Kindle, I'm reading a book called Remarkable Creatures, written by the same woman who wrote Girl with the Pearl Earring, Tracy Chevalier, I believe is her name. I'm reading that on my Kindle for my adult book club. And then for professional reading, I'm actually reading a manual on vested lesson planning, which is a lesson planning model that we're being asked to consider in our school district, and so I'm reading up on that so I can learn what I need to know.
Interesting. And I bet, yes, her classroom is just totally inspiring.
Oh, well, thank you very much.
And it looks like the conversations are kind of winding down. Donalyn, if you can put in your blog and your Twitter and, of course, yeah, your headset. Is that one of those behind the head Logitech
yes.
ones?
Yes, Logitech behind the head.
I thought so. Yeah.
I like it.
And if you can put in your contact information in the chat so people can follow up if they have questions that happen after our session. Thank you. We encourage you to contact Donalyn and give great feedback and put your future topics and future guests that you'd like to see on the survey link that will open up in your browser as soon as you exit today's session. We want to thank each of you. Oh, the author of the children's book that you just mentioned, Donalyn, if you could put that author in the chat. We want to thank you all for staying on after the formal close of the session for the continued post-show. And look for our resources to be posted on our website later this weekend, along with all of the chat log and the full list of resources that were shared today in the formal session. So have a great weekend, everybody. Hope everybody had a great Thanksgiving in the United States. And I'll post our Twitter account here in the chat. It's LiveClass20. And we will see you next Saturday with Lee Colbert for our featured teacher session for December. Have a great day, everybody. Take care, and thanks for joining us.